we were very shocked that the tariffs actually did go into effect.
The U.S.-China trade war has slowed China's economic growth, but the tariffs have also hurt U.S. companies who do business with China. It's Friday, September 6th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly in Washington. You can also join us on VOA Asia Facebook. Ahead, Hong Kong Chief Executive Carrie Lam speaks to reporters about her decision to withdraw a controversial extradition bill. And Taiwan's foreign minister says relations with the U.S. are as good as they've ever been. It's all on today's VOA Asia. China and the United States on Thursday agreed to hold high-level talks in early October in Washington. China's Commerce Ministry said in a statement on its website that the meeting was arranged during a phone call between Chinese Vice Premier, the U.S. Trade Representative, and the U.S. Treasury Secretary. News that the face-to-face talks were scheduled sent Asian, European, and U.S. stock markets higher. All three major U.S. stock indices touched over a month high. On Sunday, Washington began imposing 15% tariffs on a number of Chinese imports, while China began placing duties on U.S. crude oil. On Monday, China said it had lodged a complaint against the United States at the World Trade Organization. The U.S.-China trade war has put a dent in China's economy. Chinese economic growth slowed in the third quarter to its lowest in 10 years. Data from October, that's the first month of the fourth quarter, indicated that economic growth had slowed further. The tariffs have also hurt many U.S. companies who do business in China. One of those companies is Zero Shoes. It's a small business located in Bloomfield, Colorado. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with the company's chief financial officer, Lena Phoenix.
Prior to the tariffs that went into effect on Sunday, the average tariff on consumer products was 1.6%. The average tariff on footwear was 11%. So it's already much, much higher than it is for most other consumer products to begin with. For our company, the tariffs ranged prior to Sunday from 8.5% to 37.5%. And so this new 15% that has to be added on top of that makes it much more difficult for us to provide affordable products to our customers.
So what do you do now?
We've moved before, and we know that that is kind of fraught with peril. There's a lot of things that can go wrong. There can be delays. There can be quality issues. You have to re-educate the factory on how to make your product. You may have to redo, some of your tooling. So these are all very complex things. It's difficult to just pick up and move to another factory, even within China, let alone to another country. The thing that is so difficult for us is just the unpredictability of not knowing whether or not there's going to be a deal. Do we start looking at other options? But as a small company, our options are very, very limited. Many people have set up shop in Vietnam, but Vietnam has been catering to a lot of the larger footwear companies, and there's not very much capacity there. Moving to Vietnam comes with higher costs. It also comes with longer lead times because so many of the sourcing components still come from China, even if the assembly is done in Vietnam. And so while we would love to be able to move manufacturing back to the United States, there isn't currently infrastructure in place for footwear of our type that we can take advantage of. Some of the larger footwear companies have facilities that they've built, but obviously since we're not a part of those companies, we can't access those facilities. And so we're looking at all options, but we were very shocked that the tariffs actually did go into effect, because given that 70% of footwear sold in America comes from China, this is a tax that's going to impact most people.
What would you tell Donald Trump if you had a chance to speak with him about this?
I would say that it's important for negotiations to happen in good faith, and also with awareness of the impact of these tariffs, not just on the China side, but also on companies in America, particularly small companies who create so many of the jobs in America. You know, because we've grown so quickly as a company, an average of 84% over the last 4 years, we employ 34 people in the United States, and our growth has been significant. Significantly slowed in 2019 because of these tariffs, even though they have not gone into effect on footwear yet. The port congestion caused by the first rounds of tariffs caused us to have delays in receiving our product. Even the threat of footwear tariffs that he made in May caused us to have additional delays in receiving our product. And so we have already not been able to hire as many people as we would if these tariffs were not so uncertain and unpredictable.
That was VOA Asia's Ira Melman. He was speaking via Skype with Lena Phoenix. She's the chief financial officer of the Zero Shoe Company. On Tuesday, President Trump had warned he would be tougher on Beijing in a second term if trade talks dragged on. His remarks compounded fears that disputes between the United States and China could trigger a U.S. recession. If you go to our website, voanews.com, you'll find more of these top Asia stories. China urges Canada to release a Huawei executive detained in Vancouver. Protesters are keeping up the pressure in Hong Kong, despite the withdrawal of the extradition bill. Experts say China could be the new road for North Korea if U.S. diplomacy fails. And India says landline phone service is fully restored in Kashmir, yet Pakistan claims that India is sowing the seeds of a new war over Kashmir. Expanded coverage of these stories can also be found on Facebook at VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Taiwan's foreign minister told VOA that ties with the United States are as good as they've ever been. But there are concerns the relationship could be impacted by the U.S.-China trade dispute. VOA's Bill Gallo reports from Taipei.
Dozens of F-16s soon headed to Taiwan, the biggest U.S.-Taiwan arms deal in decades. Earlier this year, Taiwan's president was welcomed to the U.S. for a high-profile visit. It's evidence Taiwan and the U.S. are growing closer, even with no formal diplomatic ties.
I agree with most of the assessment that Taiwan relations with the United States are very good and probably better than any time before.
Foreign Minister Joseph Wu says that's in large part because of President Donald Trump.
President Trump is very supportive of Taiwan, and Vice President Pence is also a good supporter of Taiwan, and has a long track record of supporting Taiwan and the National Security Council, State Department, and Defense Department. All these people are very good friends of ours.
The U.S. downgraded ties with Taiwan in the 1970s when it recognized Beijing. But the U.S. sells weapons to help Taiwan protect itself against China, which views Taiwan as a breakaway province awaiting reunification, if necessary, by force. Ruling party lawmaker Wang Ting-yu says he supports his government's efforts to improve ties with the U.S.
If you got a gangster living next to you, and every day he climbed on the wall, yelled to you, say, your house is my house, your wife is my wife, and sooner or later I will hit you. I just try to get a baseball bat to protect my family.
But some are concerned Trump isn't as committed to Taiwan as it appears.
Something that keeps a lot of us up at night is, will Taiwan become a bargaining chip for Trump with China?
The worry stems from Trump's comments on pro-democracy protests in nearby Hong Kong, which, like Taiwan, also faces growing Chinese influence. Trump last month referred to the protest as riots and said it was up to Beijing on how to deal with them. Though Trump has shifted his tone, he sometimes links the issue to his trade dispute with China, and he hasn't vocally supported the protests as much as some would like.
If Hong Kong and Taiwan are seen as auxiliary pieces to a trade war, what does that mean for everything here then? Is this really just another card to be played, or is the U.S. going to actually take a vested interest in the well-being of democratic institutions in Hong Kong and Taiwan?
Taiwan's government tells VOA it sees no evidence Trump is going to sell out Taiwan. But Taipei scholar Liu Ye-Cheng says it's still a tricky moment.
The only thing from my own perspective Taiwan is certain about is President Trump's uncertainty. So what will happen, we really don't know. But what we can do is trying to further institutionalize our interaction with the U.S. government.
In that respect, there is little doubt Taiwan is succeeding. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Taipei.
Happening now in Asia News, an American woman was arrested at an airport in Manila with a six-day-old baby hidden in a bag. She has been charged with human trafficking, and officials are searching for the baby's parents. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. Hong Kong Chief Executive Carrie Lam has come under withering criticism for pushing an extradition bill that has sparked months of demonstrations. The bill would have allowed criminal suspects to be sent to mainland China for trial. Many in Hong Kong saw it as a glaring example of the city's eroding autonomy since the former British colony returned to Chinese control in 1997. Lam spoke to reporters on Thursday about her decision to withdraw the bill. She said the decision was her government's own initiative to break the impasse and not Beijing's directive.
Since my announcement of a dialogue with society last month, about 2 weeks ago, we have been meeting a lot of people from different backgrounds with different political positions. And they gave me this this piece of advice, which I now felt that was a very pertinent piece of advice, is that if the government wanted to start a dialogue, the government should also take the initiative to provide a basis for the dialogue. And the withdrawal of the bill to fully allay public concerns is one of those important bases for a dialogue. So I'm sharing with you the sort of developments over the last 2 months on how I have come to that decision.
Lam said the central government understands, respects, and supports her government in the entire process. She denied making a U-turn on the bill. She noted that she suspended the bill back in mid-June, days after the protest began. In July, she declared the bill effectively dead, and she is now saying the bill will be formally withdrawn without any need for debate and voting in the Legislative Council.
To answer your question about whether my announcement on actions yesterday were too little, too late, I suggest, and I hope very much, that this will be looked at in context. I have announced a package of four actions. So each of those actions requires a process of deliberation. And taken together, I hope that they would provide a basis for a dialogue and help Hong Kong to break the current impasse.
The withdrawal of the bill does meet one of the protesters' five key demands, but activists have vowed not to yield until the government fulfills all of them. However, Lam reiterated on Thursday that the government cannot accede to the protesters' other demands. Coming up, how Hong Kong became a city of protest. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello anytime you're online or on your smartphone. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime.
Now, for this news from VOA Asia, North Korea is telling the United Nations to cut its international aid staff. The country does need the help, but North Korea says the UN assistance has been politicized by hostile forces. Visit VOA Asia Facebook every day for top news stories and features. This is VOA Asia. Now, VOA Asia continues. Nearly 3 months of protests have rocked Hong Kong, and those protests may continue. Mike O'Sullivan reports on how the current demonstrations are just the latest in a long history of protest in the Chinese semi-autonomous region.
Blockages at the airport, clashes on the streets, and peaceful marches that have mobilized millions. Experts say Hong Kong's unrest has multiple causes beyond the now withdrawn extradition bill that sparked the protests.
The broader anxiety over Beijing's interference in the governance of Hong Kong that is driving this protest movement. And then the second thing is this very fact that the government is leaving the police to try and treat as a law and order issue what is essentially a political issue.
He says authorities have not addressed the underlying issues behind the umbrella movement protests of 2014. Or earlier protests over human rights and governance. This longtime resident of Hong Kong and corporate lawyer has chronicled the story of the former British colony, starting with a 1966 protest over a hike in ferry fares.
And that single protest led to a very broad movement, rioting, protests against government policies, and that then fed into further riots in 1967 during the Cultural Revolution.
That action led to changes in social welfare benefits and labor law. The 1997 handover to Beijing guaranteed continued human rights under one country, two systems. But frustration with Beijing's interference has simmered and led to a kind of direct democracy.
We are not talking about some kind of representative democracy. In fact, we are practicing some kind of what we call the participatory democracy. Everyone is participating. Everyone has something to contribute.
This year's protests have differed from others in the past in that participants have embraced it as a leaderless movement. Another local analyst says the situation reflects how protesters are a permanent part of Hong Kong's political landscape.
Anytime there's a major issue and then we come out to protest. So you can control them perhaps for a few months, perhaps even for a year. But after some rest, if any other major issue arises in the future, they will, all of a sudden they will, I mean, like another volcano eruption.
Professor Low says such ongoing protests are something Beijing, which allows no public dissent in mainland China, may have to come to terms with. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
An Asia news update. The South Korean company Samsung plans to start selling its much-anticipated folding phone on Friday. The original launch date was delayed after some reviewers reported that their screens were flickering and turning black. Samsung says the problems have been resolved. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, a festival celebrating nearly 50,000 years of Aboriginal culture in Australia's Northern Territory is addressing controversial political and social problems affecting Indigenous peoples. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
First Nation leaders are calling for a new Indigenous advisory body to advise federal parliament on laws and issues affecting Australia's original inhabitants. While it has the support of many lawmakers, the idea has been rejected by some conservative politicians as an unwanted third chamber of parliament. Australia's centre-right government has, however, promised to hold a referendum within 3 years on official recognition of Indigenous people in the nation's constitution. Senior politicians have met with some of Australia's most influential First Nation leaders at the Garma Festival in the Northern Territory on sacred land belonging to the Yolngu people in Arnhem Land. The annual event began more than 20 years ago and has become a symbol of Indigenous pride and culture as well as political activism. Aboriginal Australians suffer high rates of ill health, unemployment and poverty. Poor housing is another significant problem, according to Pat Turner from the National Aboriginal Community Controlled Health Organisation.
We've still got communities that don't have proper, healthy, potable water supplies, have decent housing. We want housing for health. We don't want overcrowding. We go with our begging bowl every year and we get the crumbs off the table and we're expected to be grateful.
The Garma Festival in Australia's Northern Territory has also heard that mining companies are facing compensation claims over allegations they've been destroying Aboriginal sacred sites that tell the story of creation. Indigenous peoples consider the earth as the mother of creation and believe the land is full of secrets and wisdom. Aboriginal spirituality is known as the dreaming and is passed between generations through stories, song, art and dance. Australia's Indigenous communities have one of the richest and oldest continuing cultures anywhere in the world. They've lived in Australia for at least 60,000 years. Indigenous Australians make up about 3% of the national population. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Since the fall of the Taliban in 2004, only 4 Afghani women have competed in the Olympics for their country. But one 22-year-old kickboxer is hoping to change that. She is challenging women's roles in this male-dominated society and training other girls to fight alongside her. Kevin Enox narrates this report.
22-year-old Nafisa Mohammadi has been a kickboxing trainer in Kabul since high school and wants to share her skills with other girls.
I have been working as a trainer for the past 2 years. I have 2 clubs. There are 20 to 25 girls in each club.
But it hasn't been easy being an Afghan woman in the kickboxing world.
I am determined to help others if I can, so they can be able to practice any sport they may choose. I believe this should be a principal right of all girls in Afghanistan.
Before kickboxing, Nafisa learned kung fu and a few other martial arts. She's won 10 medals and her goal is to compete on the world stage.
I had an opportunity to go abroad for matches, but unfortunately, I did not have money and someone to support me. Thus, I could not go abroad. I do want to go in the future.
Left, right, uppercut.
Nafisa understands the challenges she faces in a male-dominated society like Afghanistan, but believes girls should have the right to compete, especially in the Olympics. Now she wants to pay it forward and plans to expand her network of women's training clubs all over Afghanistan. Kevin Enix reporting for Hidayatullah Nouri in Kabul, VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
The sun's magnetic field changes over an 11-year period called a solar cycle, causing an ebb and flow of activity on the sun. At the beginning of a solar cycle, called the solar minimum, the sun is relatively quiet, with very few sunspots, solar flares, and coronal mass ejections. As the solar cycle progresses, the sun becomes more active until reaching its peak, called the solar maximum, about midway through the cycle. Following the solar maximum, the sun's activity calms again until reaching another solar minimum 5 to 6 years later, when it repeats the cycle again. Now, German scientists say they have found evidence that suggests tidal forces produced by the alignment of Venus, Earth, and Jupiter with the Sun, which coincidentally also takes place about every 11 years, may be influencing the Sun's magnetic fields and playing a role in regulating the solar cycle. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Thanks for joining us. And thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Sidrak Franklin, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and the VOA Asia team. That's Jim Stevenson, Ira Melman, and Keith Lane. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly in Washington. Enjoy your day.